Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again to have another conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, it is indeed a pleasure to be with you again today. With everything that is happening in this country, we need to take a moment to just count it all joy that we are still here. We are still able to fight against those that stand against us, and we're still able to help this country fulfill its destiny of becoming a true democracy. We are in the middle of an experiment called democracy, and we know that we are essential to the experiment going well. We are that element that's needed to make sure that this country live up to its creeds. At some point, we can definitely have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for everyone, that it will not be tied to the color of your skin. It will not be tied to the size of your bank account. It will not be tied to your gender. It will be allowed. It will be available. It will be guaranteed. It will be secured for every single person who is a part of this country. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is something that can happen. And given that we're not going to give up, it is something that will happen. So in the second hour of today's show, I'm really excited about that, because in that second hour, I want to spend some time asking you, has America become great yet? We understand that at this moment, take a look. I want you to hear this out, because this is where we are in America right now. At this moment, there are more National Guards folks in Washington, D.C., protecting the Capitol right now than we have in Iraq and Afghanistan combined. When you talk about what that means and how important and significant that is, we have more folks from the National Guard in Washington, D.C. at this moment, defending the nation's capital at this moment, than we do in Iraq and Afghanistan combined. If that does not stop you in your tracks, if that does not make you think and give you pause, is America great again? Because there was a sense that Donald Trump and the Trumplicans were going to make it great. You know what's great? That we now have to defend the nation's capital from dangers from within. You know what's great? Is that for the last 10 years, according to DHS, Department of Homeland Security, and their legal threat analyst, that the right-wing white supremacists have been buying ammunition and stockpiling guns for 10 years. That we're just seeing the tip. You know what's great? Here's the thing that's great. It turns out that three sitting politicians actually helped with what is going on. We're going to talk about that in the second hour, because the far right white supremacists who are getting caught are now talking. And they're naming names of specific sitting politicians who helped them get inside the Capitol, who took them on a tour to do a mission that helped them figure out how to quickly get to Nancy Pelosi and Mike Pence, both of whom have their own security forces. Y'all, it's a mess in D.C. And I think as it starts to roll down the hill, we're going to be surprised at some point at everyone who is impacted. But first, in this first hour, I want to talk about Baltimore City. I want to lay out these facts to you. And then I have the president of the Baltimore Teachers Union, Diamond Tay Brown, with me. Listen to this, folks. 68% of the city's ninth graders, or almost two-thirds, have failed at least one course since Baltimore City went virtual. The course failure rate for students in grades 6th through 12th grade went from 38% to 60%. The course failure rate for students in grades 2nd through 5th went from 30% to 55%. And the district kindergarten and first grade student failure rose from 29% to 39%. So Dr. Sonia Santelices, you know, who is in charge of this whole thing here, said that what she is pushing for now is to get kindergarten through second grade open and to eventually open it all, because our children, our babies, our future, our most precious jewel, they are failing and falling behind. So we need to get some answers about what we can do about that, but also sending teachers and students back into these particular buildings during a global pandemic where Black folks are being disproportionately impacted. We're catching it more and we're dying from it more. We have President Diamond Tay Brown with us. How are you, President Brown?
I'm good. How are you?
Haven't spoken to you in a while. Happy to have you back on the show. Our hope and prayers that you have been safe during this very difficult time as we figure out the next step for Baltimore City Schools.
I've been safe.
Good. So can you talk with us, Diamond Tay, first about the presser that came out, that Dr. Santelices wants kindergarten through second grade open. She wants teachers and students back in school. And the word we're getting is that teachers and family members are not happy about this. Can you give us some understanding of what's going on?
Certainly. I think that Dr. Santelices is, of course, under a lot of pressure to expand in-person learning. And at the same time, we are concerned about what the conditions of in-person learning look like. And so since Dr. Santelices may be under a lot of pressure to expand in-person learning, we are stepping up to say we do understand all of the challenges of virtual learning. We also understand the ramifications of virtual learning, and they weren't surprising or unexpected to us. And at the same time, we're saying if everyone thinks it's so serious and we're so concerned, then we need to make the building safe for a return. We can't just skip to return. Safe is the key word for us.
So has Dr. Santelices worked with you or spoken with you or given you any indication that the schools, the buildings that we're talking about, the ones where they have a lack of a solid heating and air conditioning system, where there's no fresh, clean running water for students to drink from the water fountains, those buildings that we left in such a state of disrepair before COVID-19, is there any indication that they have poured some of the millions of dollars that are sitting around into bringing things up to par so that our babies and our teachers can be safe?
No, ma'am. Actually, I only have indications of the opposite.
Oh, my.
Right now, as you all know, all secretaries and office assistants have been directed to go back into buildings. They've been in buildings since September. And many of these secretaries and office assistants report that conditions in the buildings aren't even safe for them to be in there, or a limited amount of people to be in there. And that is why we are fighting so hard for no additional people to come in, because the people that already have to be in the buildings are really scared. They're anxious, and they're reporting that the safety protocols and measures that are in the health and safety guide are not what's being actually implemented. And also, the district has given us a document that shows the ventilation update.
Right.
And as of now, that document shows that only about, I don't even think 25%, only about 15 of 160-something schools have had their filtration systems upgraded. And remember, I just said our secretaries are in all of the schools. So we already have put people in buildings that don't even have filtration systems upgraded. And so we don't want to put children in those buildings. Already we have subjected adults to that. And we don't think it's okay to subject children to those same conditions.
Okay, so Diamond Tay, let me just take a step back, because what you're saying is greatly concerning. That is the opposite of what we're hearing from Dr. Sonia Santelis. There's just an air that things are taken care of, that trust us, we have our young people, we have our teachers' best interests at heart, that we laid everything down on the table. The feeling from Dr. Sonia Santelis is that this is the only option to make sure that our children don't continue to fall behind. But it seems like, Diamond Tay, it's an either-or situation. That either we send them back to try to teach them during COVID-19, or we keep them home and they continue to fail. Is it either or? Is it and both?
We don't think it's either or. We think it is, since we have to be in a setting of virtual learning, we should put the same energy behind virtual learning and the same resources behind virtual learning that we would put in in-person learning, especially since the district has all of the same expectations of students and staff during virtual learning and during a global pandemic as they had pre-pandemic and during in-person learning. And to be specific about that, what I mean is we're still grading students during a global pandemic and wondering why they're not doing well. We're still testing students during a global pandemic and wondering why they're not doing as great as they were before.
Now,
we are still evaluating teachers during a global pandemic on a mode of learning that they haven't been trained to execute. And so, but at the same time, we're pondering all of these things. It's just really surprising that people didn't expect.
This is really surprising.
The mode of learning overnight, that there's going to be some type of challenge there.
But let me ask you, Diamond Tay, because I'm trying. You see, I'm trying to understand what Dr. Santelis is saying. So I just want to separate it out for a second. Okay, so COVID-19 notwithstanding, that is our reality now, and we're trying to work around that. Can you speak with us for just a moment here about the fact that so many of our children are failing, and if the research holds out to be true, right? Because I've really taken a look at this and studied this over years. We're talking about children falling behind who will never be able to catch up with their peers. Where do you stand on that? Like, what do we do at this point?
Well, I have questions about that. You know, I know people want us to just answer the question, but I ask people more questions like, how do we define learning loss? Do we define learning loss as how someone does on a standardized test?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, then that's what our solutions are going to have to be around, I guess, unfortunately. Or do we define learning loss as only what someone learns in a school building? And, you know, and also, what was our expectations? And what do we have in place to mitigate that? So, for example, if I'm struggling in virtual learning, then I would, as an educator, ask some questions. One, do you have a laptop? Two, do you have internet access? Three, have I connected this family with the community school coordinator to make certain that they have the resources they need? And four, have I connected the family with the school social worker to make certain that if there are any challenges in the family, that they're being addressed? Because even if I put that person in a building and I didn't ask any of those things that I said, I don't see the circumstances changing.
So are we talking at this point, Diamond Tay? I mean, because with COVID-19.
And so that's what I'm saying is,
right,
I need to understand what is,
right,
being identified as learning loss. If learning loss is you failed the class, then all of those questions would need to be answered about that person failing that class.
Well, then why aren't we, Diamond Tay, why aren't we just putting a pin on the year? Because the way we stand right now, and I'm just talking about what's in Baltimore City. I'm not even talking about what's happening with the independent schools, because I've checked. The independent schools, they're going back. They're moving on. Okay. Does it work to just put a pin on the year to continue with kind of whatever's happening here, but that when we get back in the building, that we do a reset? Because at this point, some young people are moving forward, some are falling behind. Should we just reset this almost year and a half at this point?
I mean, I think we should. I think we already failed by having the same expectations in a completely different circumstance. And so at this point, we should acknowledge that our expectations were false, were unrealistic, and that we need to shift our expectations. Dr. K, I wanna get beyond, like, it's for us, it's really frustrating because it's beyond what we should do. Like,
right.
We know what we should do. We've been communicating what we should do, but we don't have the authority to make that decision. So
yeah.
We're like reading and begging and continually educating the community on what we see and what we know, but we're up against a society that takes the word over. You know, educational experts, people with doctorates,
right,
people
right.
that have been over the person in the classroom.
Well, see, now this is what I don't understand, because when we look at, you know, Dr. Sonia Santelices, not just as someone who has her degrees, right, or not just someone who's also a mother. We know that. These are things she has talked about. But that she is supposed to be the advocate for our babies, with the idea that we look to the Baltimore Teachers Union as the advocate for our teachers, taking into account the classroom. That if these two pieces can't come together, then how do we redouble our efforts or refocus our efforts on trying to figure out what did our children gain this year outside of grit, right? I mean, outside of, you know, being able to work through any situation, what did they really gain? How do we build on some of the out-of-classroom learning that's taken place and give some space and credit to that type of growth and development?
I think what we should have been focused on is the growth in computer literacy.
Okay.
Prior to the pandemic, our students were technologically deficient because they did not have the resources they needed to be in the 21st century. And then we had an opportunity to focus solely on technology. And we could have capitalized on that opportunity and made computer literacy gains the goal. And I guarantee you, had we done that, we would see increases, because we went from not having computers, no time. I mean, I'm an English teacher, and I never could get a laptop for my class,
right,
to having a laptop every day. I mean, there's a lot of gains that have happened as far as computer literacy. But that's not what the powers that be want to focus on.
Okay, so now with that in mind, all right, so right now the reality is that Sonia Santelices is looking to put children back in school. We know that students that are in special education classrooms, some of them have already gone back. She wants K through second grade back, and she's looking to roll out and to continue bringing all the students back eventually to the school. Even though you and I both know there is no vaccine for the under 18 population. They haven't even done vaccine trials yet for that population. So you're sending children back without any hopes of getting a vaccine, at least in the short-term future. Where do we go from here, Diamond Tay?
Well, I think that honestly what the community needs to consider is strongly putting different people on the school board, to put it simply.
Mm-hmm.
Because the school board is supposed to be the checks and balances of all of these decisions being made. And I am telling the community that what is going to happen is that if we don't work together to stop this or get the school board to speak up or do something, it will move forward and the plan will fail. That's what we're most concerned about. Because it's that you're pushing a plan verse that's not well thought out, or maybe you think it's well thought out, but it's not hitting the ground like you think it is. and we're going to fail. And we, but we, what we do know is that we can do better at virtual learning and keep our kids safe and put all our energy into making it better. We should be talking to our students. Let's get those students together that fail and talk to them about how can we do this better. Even if part of that is putting you in a school building that's not ready for you to be there, we still need to hear from them. How do we do it better?
Let me ask you, Diamond Taylor, my last question. I know people want to chime in. Folks, I want to open up the phone lines, 410-319-8888. Have we, and I'm talking about the adults, I'm talking about educators, I'm talking about Baltimore City residents, have we failed our children? Because when they were failing in school, who spoke out? When we were waiting for computers to arrive, who spoke out? We were trying to get tutoring programs. Like, we're trying to do all of this while trying to stay alive ourselves. But have we failed our babies?
Absolutely, we failed our babies, which is why we're fighting so hard to not continue to fail them. We have an opportunity to shift. All of us have a pause, a moment to think, a moment to reconsider. And we are standing up as educators and parents and students and saying, this is our moment. We failed you, and we're not going to continue to do that. We're not going to continue to let people okey-doke us.
How are the teachers doing, Diamond Tay? Are they still dealing with issues? I remember going into schools, and there were a lot of teachers who were over that age bump. Into the area where they were considered to be high risk. I don't see teachers on the list for any of the first 2 to 3 phases for getting the vaccine. So how are the teachers doing? And the phone lines are lighting up. I want to have you answer that, and then I'm going to take some of the calls before we have to let you go.
Okay, I'll quickly say the teachers are very, very anxious. My PSRPs, which are our paraprofessionals and secretaries, are very anxious. And it's not just because they are feeling unsafe in the wake of COVID. It's also about so much uncertainty. We are very calculated people. Dr. K, you're an educator. You know we plan out everything.
The whole year.
And so when we still have questions like, okay, if I have to go back into the building, what happens to the kids that I was teaching online? That's a problem.
Right.
If we still have questions like, okay, how many students am I going to have when I go into the building next week? That's the problem.
Right.
Like, these are basic questions that any educator is going to want to know when you tell them they're about to go teach someone.
All right, we have a couple of phone calls. I want to get some of them in here. We have Mark on the phone from Maryland. Mark, how are you?
I'm fine. I was just speaking, I guess, to the young lady that was on the phone. I don't know if she was one of the producers, but I got upset I'm a scientist. I've worked in... I'm an application engineer. I deal with indoor air quality and the science of that circles around when we populate buildings, how we measure the air, what we measure in the air, and the contamination levels that continue to exist. And the monies that have been spent and the efforts that have been allocated towards virtual learning, I know for a fact that the same effort hasn't been put forth in making our facilities safe and giving the schools, the teachers, the necessary data and information so that they can make their own personal decisions as to whether or not it's sufficient and safe enough for people to enter. So me, myself, I'll just give you a simple example. Over in Asia, they do it totally different. Over in Europe, they're totally different. They know specifically what the indoor air quality level is, what the concentration of CO2 levels are, and how contagious the virus is with respect to that. We're not doing any of that here. And it really saddens me that we spend so much money in terms of virtual learning, and we haven't put that same effort in making our facilities and prepare our facilities for the future, for now and the future moving forward. And if you don't have the facility and infrastructure prepared to do that, we fail.
Thank you so much. Let me ask you, Diamond Tay. So where it stands right now, I know that in Baltimore City, if I'm not mistaken, and you know this better than I do, that there is a no-strike clause for Baltimore City teachers, if I'm not mistaken. So in a sense like this, when they don't want to go back, but they're being told they have to go back, what can they do other than just go back, Diamond Tay? What can they do?
Well, we're going to continue to fight. And I don't know what that looks like, because I have to talk to my members. Many of them are calling for an emergency meeting, which right. I'm going to have to respond to. And what it looks like without right now is some are going to go back, some are not. Some are going to take leave. Some are going to resign.
Wow.
Some are going to retire. Some are going to teach under duress. That's
wow.
what it looks like.
Wow. I mean, just be clear. Some will go back. Some will retire. Some will take a leave of absence. Some will teach under duress. Meanwhile, we have children that we want to learn in the environment when teachers are all on those levels. This is outrageous. This is outrageous.
That's what people are asking for.
Diamante, please keep us updated about what's going on. I appreciate your time. Folks, we're going to continue to have this conversation. Thank you for your leadership, Diamante Brown, the president of the Baltimore Teachers Union.
Thank you for your knowledge, Dr. K. Have a great day.
You too. So, folks, we're going to hold it here for just a moment. When we come back, let's open up the lines to you. Look, are you listening? Our students are failing and they're going back to school. Baltimore City Public Schools. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. To today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. KY's Whitehead. Folks, I want to go to the presser from Dr. Sonia Santelises, who has made the decision, who has made the announcement that kindergarten through second grade will be going back into the buildings. She said going back in the buildings is better than keeping them home because they're failing at home. I think we need to talk about this, but let's listen to this presser first and then we'll talk after that.
Highlights of our plan within city schools. For the second semester, Baltimore City Schools will expand optional learning to traditional and transformation school students in kindergarten through fifth grade and ninth grade students and high school seniors. The program will be open to all traditional K through 5 students who attend an elementary middle school, or all 9th and 12th grade students who attend traditional and transformation high schools. Families may decide whether to participate in in-person learning or to remain in virtual learning. For charter and contact schools and contract schools, please visit your school's page to see plans for in-person learning. We will launch this effort in 3 phases. Kindergarten through second grade begins Tuesday, February 16th. Grades 3 through 5 begin Monday, March 1st. Ninth grade and 12th grade students start Monday, March 1st. Our rationale is clear. For this, for 3 reasons. First, as I spoke Tuesday night at our board meeting, we know there are groups of young people who desperately need support they can only receive in person. The second, we have growing numbers of our families who want this in-person option. And third, we've proven we can do this safely, and we continue to increase our mitigation efforts and will continue those efforts throughout the remainder of the school year. So I know you have questions and we can get started now.
Yes. So that was Dr. Sonia Santelise. She is the Baltimore City School Superintendent, School CEO. Yes. So she's the CEO of Baltimore City Schools. Here's the deal, folks. She said they're doing this for 3 reasons. One is that there are groups of young people that need support that they can only receive in person. Now, I'm going to tell you what she said, and then I'll tell you what I heard, okay? So what she said was that there are groups of young people who need support that they can only receive in person. What I heard is a question like, well, what have they been doing for the last year? If they could only receive the support in person, they've been home since last March. You're saying that they have not gotten any support through the spring, through the fall, and here we are in 2021? Okay, number two. She said that there's a growing number of families who want this in-person schooling. What I heard is y'all want your kids back in school, so I'm going to do it. And I got questions. I want to know, given the fact that parents are staging rallies to fight against it, who are the parents that have Dr. Sonia Santelices on speed dial that they could say, look, sister, get the schools open so little Rashida and little Jacob can get back up in the building? I'm just trying to figure out, because I'd like to know when the parents, and if you're one of those parents, hey, call me, 410-319-8888, because I've been to just about every school in Baltimore City, because I do teacher training. And some of the schools, they can actually hold this. They have a working AC system. They probably dealt with HVAC. They can open up the windows. They got water fountains that work. And then there's some schools that will not be able to hold the tide. If we did not have a working HVAC system prior to COVID-19 and you did not change it during COVID-19, then what is going on in the schools? I'm sending my kid back to a school that didn't have working air and heat before, in the before time, that my kid couldn't get water from the water fountain in the before time. So if they couldn't get water in the water fountain because there was lead in the water, how is my little son, little Jacoba, going to be able to wash his hands every 20 seconds like they told us we're supposed to? If the schools were crowded in the before time, I'm just asking, in the before time it was crowded. So if that was crowded in the before time, how is my little baby Layla going to have some social distancing in the school? Because are you telling me that you must be choosing which children to come back? Because I've been in classrooms that had 35 children in them. So ain't no social distancing with 35 students. So which means you're going to bring back, what, 12? You're going to bring back 15? I'm just asking. Number three, Dr. Sonia Santelices has said, and I just want to quote here. Don't make me laugh. She said, we have proven that we can do this safely. I just want to know that if Baltimore City schools have proven that they can do this safely, then they have actually accomplished what no other system in no other country on any of the continents on this planet have been able to do. Because schools have been opening and closing all over the planet. I saw the video last year of a little kid in South Korea. They got met down the street. And so the teacher down the street, first they spray your hand and your backpack and your pants and your shirt. Then you step to the next counter. You step there, you put your feet, you clean the bottom of your shoes. Then you make a left, you go in the gate. First gate, you do your hands. Next gate, they take your temperature. Next gate, I mean, like the whole thing. And that school closed. Israel reopened. They had a whole plan. Half the school's home. And they, but Dr. Santelices said that they have proven that they can do this safely. Then we need to hold them at their word. That's all I'm saying. We're in the middle of a global pandemic. I want you to take that information, and I'm going to go to Amanda first, and then I'll go to Jessica. I want you to take that information. About, that's two-thirds of them have failed at least one course this year. The course failure rate for students in grades 6th through 12th grade is about 60%. So I want you to understand, over half of the 6th through 12th graders in Baltimore City have a course failure. The course failure rate for students in grades 2nd through 5th grade, it went from 30% to 55%. So over half of our 2nd through 5th graders are failing. Kindergarten through 1st grade, 39% of them are failing. Do you understand that we're talking about failing an entire generation here? We can hold these two things at the same time and have this conversation. 410-319-8888. First, we'll go to Amanda, a new caller who's a Baltimore City parent. How are you, Amanda?
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
Yes. So, yes, I live in a city, and my kids go to Catholic school mm-hmm. in the city, and they've been attending school since August the 29th.
Okay.
And I feel real safe about it. We had no issues. And you had a choice to bring your child to school or you stay home, you know, with online learning. So I'm thinking that the city schools is looking at some of these county schools that be having, you know, very good success since August the 29th. And I think they, you know, taking a good look at those Catholic schools in the city that has been open, has not been closed since August the 29th.
Okay, so now let's unpack that. Without, of course, saying the name of the school, your children or your child attends a Catholic school.
Yeah.
I'm going to say there are probably a couple things working here. One, if they're attending a Catholic school, if I'm not mistaken, Catholic schools cost money, right? So
right.
Parents are, now we're not talking about taxes. Parents are, you know, chalking up whatever that payment is per month. You're writing that check, which means in order for the school to stay open and meet your needs, I would bet, because I've been looking at what's been happening with Catholic and independent schools, they went to the far extreme. They changed the HVAC system. They set up tents outside. A lot of them are having food bought in and scaled. They have students who can get regular COVID tests. They have all the protocols in place because there's money on the line, plus the schools are smaller. Is that right?
Yeah, the school is a little smaller, but it's not. They really didn't change too much, as, you know, the lunch is there. What the kids do, they stay in their class all day with their teacher. So
right.
They eat in their class and do everything with the teacher.
Which is very different.
So once
different.
They with that teacher,
very
they
different.
Stay with that teacher all day, even when it's for outdoor play.
I mean, think about that. So
yes.
you can do that when it's small, but Baltimore City is a different beast altogether. I don't mean beast in a different way. I'm talking about beast in terms of trying to navigate the number of children in the spaces that we're talking about. I am so happy that your children have been moving ahead. I want to think, though, we have so many children, and when I say so many, there's a cap there, children who are attending Catholic schools in the city, Baptist schools in the city, independent private schools in the city. They've been in school moving ahead. Baltimore City public school students have been either standing still or falling behind. And that's where the concern is. Thank you so much, Amanda.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's not forget, folks, there were a number of Baltimore City parents who said, look, my child doesn't even have the device. Like, where is the device? I know parents whose children were on pen and paper well into the summertime. Like, they got on track for the fall, but they missed the spring. 410-319-8888. Let's go, Jessica, Pam, Clarence, and then Sekou. Jessica, how are you? I know you're an educator.
Hi,
thanks for calling.
I'm doing so well. I'm in traffic, and I'm on my Bluetooth, so I hope you guys can hear me
clearly. We can. Thank you for calling. Talk to us about where you stand as an educator during this situation here.
So I'm in a different tier of an educator. I own a nonprofit that focuses on STEAM development and programs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's not in the traditional sense of K-12.
Okay.
And that is what I want to bring a different perspective to the conversation.
Okay.
How much control do we have over our kids, 8 to 18, in Baltimore City? And that's just a question to throw out there, because just like the caller said before, and you added too, you have independent schools, you have charter schools, you have programs. But obviously, the curriculum from Baltimore City is outdated, and the learning curve is greater, because now you see everything's moving towards technology-based, computer-based learning for right now. So would it help us help our kids if, instead of giving them traditional curriculum, if the professionals, the other teachers, the other educators came together and said, look, we're going to take this into our own hands and kind of give ourselves over to these nonprofits that are helping in Baltimore City currently to become educators with these nonprofits. And then we could get incubator hubs. It's tons of them all over Baltimore City that we could use that are already set up for COVID distancing and use them for curriculum. Mm. And then we could teach children the things that we think as parents and as leaders are crucial for them so that they are not left behind.
Well, let me ask you this, Jessica, because I was just thinking with what you said. I'm thinking about my own sons for a moment here as a mom. The school that my sons go to, they have been on computers since fifth grade. The school where they attended, they went paperless as a fifth grade. So when the world shifted, because they'd already been doing their work on computers since as far back as they can remember, for them it wasn't that hard of a shift. I'm like, this is kind of the adjustment I'm talking. I've been in Baltimore City Schools where there's only one cart of the iPads that get moved from classroom to classroom. We're talking about a technological divide that there was no training either for students, parents, or teachers to jump right. the divide to all of a sudden move to online learning. Like, there's work. You have to learn how to do that.
Absolutely, Dr. K. And that brings me back to the first question. How much control do we really have as a community, as teachers, as parents, as nonprofit organizers, as community leaders? How much control do we have over our children's futures? Because before I get off the phone, I want to take this picture. In order to go to a school, you have to have vaccines. You have to have this. You have to have
Come
that.
On.
And it's certain things that just seem like it's just in the way of our children growing. So can we take back our children's education and work with each
Come
other
on.
Versus
Come
working
on.
With the government? And we can use Ooh. Libraries.
Yeah.
We have money. There is money in the community. It's a lot of nonprofits that are Black-owned or ethnic-owned that are ready and willing to solve this problem. And so that's just what I wanted to throw out there.
I appreciate you. I appreciate
Absolutely.
You.
Yes,
that's
ma'am.
What we need. That's folks, look. Because let me tell you what it sounds like we're saying. It sounds like, and I always feel this way, we can't do anything to help the children now. The ones we have now, they're just going to have to fail. We can make it better for the next generation. But you understand what we're saying. It's like when they did, when they moved from doing phonics and phonemics to whole language. I don't know about you, how old you are. They used to take phonics and phonemics, right? Remember phonics and phonemics, y'all? Learning that the A's and A and the sound and the B. Okay, and they moved to whole word learning. Remember that? That students who learn whole word learning did not learn how to break down and do syllables, phonics, phonemics. And I know there's a difference. I'm a phonics, phonemics baby. My sister does whole word. And her spelling, we can talk about that. Because I'm like, you never learn how to sound it out. Well, what they did is say, you know, it's not working. We'll go back to phonics and phonemics. But we can't go back and reteach the generation that didn't get it. They just have to go with whole word. They have to go with whole word. They have to figure it out. And I know them because I see some of them. I've taught some of them on the college level. I can always tell phonics and phonemics versus whole word. I'm like, because you didn't learn how to sound it out. So we're just saying these students are just going to be behind. We got to toss them out. We'll pick up on the next generation. No, no. What about the ones today? Pam from Baltimore, how are you?
How are you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. Okay, well, there are a few problems. One issue was, since the kids are learning virtually, you can't have seven classes.
Mm-mm.
They just needed to streamline them to each grade level with what was most pertinent. And this, I do question the Board of Education, and I do question the CEOs, because if you're in charge, you're being paid, you have a doctorate, why didn't you come up with this process? The most important. If you can't read, write, and comprehend, why do you need to learn history?
Come on.
It's not important.
Come
the
on.
Basic foundation skills for each grade level. Secondly, they did have an opportunity to bring them back, like, you know, the K through, let's say, 6 in the summer
right.
and have them outside in 10, maybe alternating.
Right.
But again, the board missed this opportunity to think outside the box. That's why you're being paid, to think outside the box. And secondly, I have a big issue with Baltimore City. They need to be audited at every
Ooh,
level.
Come on.
Every county, Baltimore County, Harford County, these kids have computers. They've been doing this computer thing since 2017. So what has taken Baltimore City so long to catch on? And then the other issue I have, and this is with a lot of parents, the parents that can afford, they are not, maybe because they're just frustrated, I don't understand. But they're not spending the extra time on educational things. Like, they all got these great PlayStations or whatever you call them now.
Mm.
And I was like, did you get your child any educational toys? To go along with these games? You could do some fun games, but you could be like, hit the ball, spell bat, spell whatever. The parents are not taking on their responsibility. And I've been so surprised when I've asked the kids, what did you get as for educational gifts for the ones who can afford? But there are so many other programs out here, and even the pair professionals, a lot of them aren't working. They would more than happily go in or do Zoom to help these kids catch up. But then again, it's a strategic and lack of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But I think everyone can do more. So from every aspect. And
I
the kids with
you.
Disability and challenges, they should have had someone at home working with the parents or teaching them how to, you know, attempt to work with their child. You know, it's a lot going on, and you're right. We are failing
a whole generation
of kids.
Them?
And as I told my girlfriend, by the time your kid goes back to school, she'll be in third grade, then fourth. Not only will she be at a different educational level, but she will also be entering a different level as far as mentally and socially.
Yes, yes. Thank you for saying that, because students are moving ahead. What you just laid down, that type of dichotomy between students that are moving forward and students that are moving forward in terms of age, but in terms of literacy, in terms of education, they're falling behind. But they're still going to be 16 years old, whether you can read or write or not. You'll still be 18 soon, whether you can do the work or not.
And I speak to them for education. I told someone, I said, there are plenty of other platforms like OutSchool. They do writing. They got Cramley. And I said, it's only $10. Only $10.
Yeah.
To give your kid that extra push if you don't want to work with them. A parent asked me if they should send their child to Kumon. And I told them no. And they said, why? I said, because you do not reinforce reading in the household. Until you reinforce it in the household, you can send them there, but it's not going to stay. It's like me going to the gym, working with a trainer twice a week. And then I go home and sit down and eat bonbons.
And I love that lifestyle. But as you know, what's going to do? You can't outrun a bad diet. You cannot outrun a bad. I've learned that the hard way. We can buy them what we need, but we can't outrun the curriculum if it's not working or if we haven't taught our students how to study.
Right. You just
how
have
to learn.
Do
yes.
the work. And this one parent, they asked me, they said, what can I do? I said, okay, here. I pulled up my phone, took them to Google, and it showed you how to write a sentence. It tells you parts of the sentence. So even if you don't know, because you're not an expert, not understand this, you have something better than we had when we were growing up. We got Google to help you along.
Please, the World Wide Web. Thank you so much. I got to stop you there, folks. I'm just saying. I know, and some of y'all, I'm getting your messages that you're angry at me. You're saying I'm blaming the parents. I'm blaming the teachers. No, I'm not doing that. I'm just asking you, if we don't speak up for the most vulnerable, if we don't speak up for the ones who don't have a voice at this moment, if we don't speak up for our babies, then what exactly are we doing here? Like, what are we doing? They're the ones who are suffering. And if we don't speak up for them, then what exactly are we doing here? We have Mark on the phone from Pikesville. Mark is a Baltimore City educator. How are you?
Dr. K, hello. Pleasure to talk to you, as always.
Yes, thank you.
I've been gone for a while. Just told Justine I'm recovering from a rather, you know, rigorous surgery.
Oh, well, I'm so glad you're back. I'm glad you're okay.
Yes. Dr. K, you know, let me just say this. Geologists often say that it's the foolish man who builds his house upon sand.
Mm.
Baltimore City school system, as well as the politics of Baltimore City, constantly build houses upon sand. Dr. Santelis, my boss, is true. She's right. We have proven that it can be done. But what we're not telling you is that I have been putting my life, as well as so many other educators, on the line since September because I have been redirected to one of the learning centers. But, Dr. K, the learning center where I work, and I won't mention any names, the school is pristine. It is one of the 21st century schools. It had only been open since January of last year. It is pristine. And we only had, no class had more than 15 kids in it. We were socially distant, and we had everything in place. There's no room to do that in the entire Baltimore City school system for every student. So that those numbers that they give, she's right. We have proven it. We had zero incidents at the learning center where I work. We had one student whose parent contracted COVID-19, and she voluntarily took her student out because she said, I don't want to endanger the other kids there. But she's right. We have done it, but we've done it on such a small scale. It's like the young lady said, we had everything we needed. I can't foresee them being able to do this all across the entire system.
They're bringing them all back. Mark, they're bringing them back. This is how we're rolling in. They are coming back to school.
Exactly, and that's my point. How are we going to do it? Again, 21st century school, the school was spanking brand new in every classroom, and we only, again, the school I worked, Dr. K, we only had six classrooms.
Come on.
It was only six classrooms of kids. My cohort that I was in charge of, that I facilitated over, only had nine children, and usually
Come
only
on.
About six showed up.
It's not going to be that way. When, when you say that children have
when
to go
you
back.
Ask the question, who are these parents that are saying we want our kids back?
Yeah.
I hate to say it this way, Dr. K, but they're not listening to EAA. They're down the station.
Yeah,
listening to.
I don't know what. They're listening to the wrong station. Let's
exactly.
be very clear.
Unfortunately,
the wrong station.
Those are the parents who, you know, who would call me and say, why is school closed today?
Yeah.
You know,
On days when it's ice. I've been there as a school teacher. It's ice outside. They're like, open up the schools. I'm like, I can't even get out my driveway.
Again, and Dr. K, if you allow me just a quick second.
Yes, sir.
With all of the craziness that happens in Baltimore City, you know me, I never like to end on craziness. I just want to uplift the system because there are a lot of good that come out. I want to concentrate. My anesthesiologist last Monday, January 4th, was a young brother by the name of Dr. Darrell, I won't give his last name, who came into my room and told me he was from Edmondson High School, class of 1998.
Nice.
He took me under and brought me back, and I'm here to have this conversation because of the good that comes out
go.
Of the Baltimore City school system.
There you go. We lift up that brother.
Yes, sir.
If you're
Take
out
care,
there,
sir.
Brother, listen up and give us a call so we can lift you up.
That's
We're
right.
going to hold it here for just a moment. We have Michael, who's a concerned grandparent holding on. Clarice is a new caller from Columbia. Sake, who's on the line. We got a line for you. Y'all, they're sending our babies back to school. I think we got to talk about this. Today with Dr. K, I'm Dr. KY's Whitehead, stay with us.